Tony.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. I'll fix your favorite dishes.
Our guest today is Susan Weiler. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. We're happy to be here.
Oh, we're so happy to have you. She's going to teach us all kinds of wonderful things this morning. She is an RDN, an integrated nutritionist at Triangle Nutritional Wellness in Chapel Hill. She's a cookbook author, lots of books, and also the author of some wellness books. And also, she's the former editor of Food and Wine magazine. So we're really happy to have you. We have lots of interesting things to talk about.
Thank you, Janice. Actually, I'm the former food editor. I don't want to take more credit than I deserve.
Food editor.
That's
well,
the good one still.
Okay, well, that's just great. So
you didn't even talk, I know before, you have a lot of really interesting background, I think. You
really
sent
does.
Us a list of all the people that you've studied with culinary-wise, and it was like the who's of
is.
Culinary that you've studied with. It was very impressive. It just kept going and going, and I was like, oh my gosh, she studied with everyone that there is to study with, you know? So thanks so much. It's great to have you.
It really is. I'd like to kind of go back to the beginning because I would like to know what an RDN is. Explain that to us.
RDN is Registered Dietitian Nutritionist, and dietitians used to call themselves registered dietitians. When I started in school, which was not all that long ago, it was about, eight years ago, we were told you must call yourself a dietitian because your dog could be a nutritionist. Because to be a registered dietitian, you have to have a certain level of education, which is currently a bachelor's degree with internship hours. Going forward, it's going to require a master's degree or a PhD because the profession is becoming much more scientifically based.
Good. That's a good sign, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. So we had to call ourselves dietitians, and then all of these other people started calling themselves nutritionists, and nutritionist is a much more elegant word. Everyone thinks of our registered dietitian as a little old lady with a hairnet dishing out overcooked green beans, right, in the cafeteria, because
that's
dietitians
funny.
Do play roles in food service at hospitals and long-term care facilities, but more and more we're interested in food as medicine, and so there became an awareness that nutritionist was recognized by the public as a better designation. So those of us who deal more with medical nutrition therapy call ourselves registered dietitian nutritionists.
Registered, say it again.
Registered dietitian nutritionist.
Okay, so it's like both. It covers it all.
Covers
in case
all.
You're confused if it's a dietitian or a nutritionist. That's good. Okay.
But if someone asks me, I say I'm a nutritionist. When someone walks into my office for the first time, I say, you know I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist because I'm licensed in the state of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And that means my credentials have been checked and that I have a certain level of credentials.
So integrated nutritionist.
Yes. I actually started with integrative nutrition before I became legitimate, if you'll call it that. So I was a food editor for many years. Food is my life. I'm very lucky I've been able to channel it so in such a positive way. And I was still a food editor, and as a professional job, someone fixed me up with a Swiss doctor, Dr. Thomas Rau, who runs a clinic, the Paracelsus Clinic, about an hour outside of Zurich in Switzerland. She had had a terrible cancer that two treatments that Sloan Kettering had not addressed. And she went over to Switzerland, and he ended up giving her 9 good years. And she said to me early on, she said, the basis of his healing, he's an MD, he started out as a rheumatologist, but the basis of his healing is nutrition, and he needs a book, and you should write it. And I said, I'm
of
so
course.
Glad you're feeling better, but I'm not interested.
Oh, my God.
Because I thought that good nutrition was substituting olive oil for butter, and I was eating the best food and drinking the best wine all over the world and having a merry time. But she kept at me, and I finally went to the website, and I was impressed, and I finally went to a conference where I met Dr. Rau. And he's truly brilliant, and I don't use that word lightly. And I ended up saying yes, yes to the chef, yes to the doctor. And I went over to Switzerland for weeks at a time. So I ended up shadowing him and going around the clinic and having him explain everything for the equivalent of months. And working with him also in the States. There's a biological medicine network which sponsors him here. And they used to be through the Marion Institute in Massachusetts, and they had many, many seminars, which I attended as well. So I was steeped in this integrative type of medicine. And when I codified his diet, or his whole program, I put myself on it because my name was going to go on the book as with Susan Weiler. And I wanted to make sure I knew what it would feel like if I was going to recommend this to someone. And to be honest, I really thought I'd lose some weight, because if you go on almost any program, you lose some weight in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But I expected nothing else. And it completely rejuvenated me physically and mentally. It was like being reborn, and I didn't expect it. I was a cynic. It's not like I was anticipating this. All I was looking for was weight loss. I didn't believe in integrative medicine. And it changed my life so profoundly. I stayed on his 3-week diet, detox diet, for 10 weeks, lost 12 pounds, which for me is a lot of weight. But more importantly, my blood pressure went down, my cholesterol went down, my mind became really sharply focused, my mood stabilized, my energy became, it was like I took a drug very quickly, and it didn't stop. So I stayed on not the strict program, because it's protein deficient. You can't stay on it forever, but on a modified vegetarian diet. I ate meat sometimes. I ate chicken and fish at home, and if I went to a friend's house and they served a pork chop, I'd eat half of it. You know, I would never say I couldn't eat anything. But I note after 5 months, I had actually a very large, I don't know if you want me to talk about this, I had a large goiter because I had an undiagnosed thyroid condition for many years. I'd complained and complained, but my numbers didn't conform to the old numbers. And finally, when they gave me some Synthroid, I got rid of all my symptoms, but this goiter stayed for about 5 years. And it was 3 to 5 months on this diet, and I looked in the mirror one day and I said, I think my neck looks thinner. And within a matter of a few months, it just drained. It was just amazing. And within 9 months, my chronic sinusitis went away. I used to be on antibiotic from November to February, practically every year. And after 2 years, I realized my seasonal allergies were gone. And this is in Chapel Hill.
That's
the Garden of Eden, you know.
So, Garden of Allergies.
I became sold. I became very passionate. And it took me 2 years to figure out what to do. And the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill had at that time the second best Department of Public Master's in Public Health after Johns Hopkins, which is pretty good.
Yes.
And number one in nutrition. Mm. And I had never heard of public health, but somebody turned me on to it. And I came down here. I put all my eggs in one basket because I needed. I mean, I went to the University of Chicago when the dinosaurs roamed the earth. And I was an English major, you know. I had no credentials. So I needed a whole year of prerequisites. And I came down to do it because where I was living, which was in my country house in the mountains of Pennsylvania, would have been a very hard place to get to school in the winter. So I was very naive. I knew nothing about in-state tuition. Wasn't I lucky? I came down a year in advance and took all my prerequisites and went through the program here and graduated as a traditional registered dietitian because my background was so integrative. I wanted to have a very strict scientific background. So if I was going to choose to do something that was outside of the standard norm, I would know the scientific evidence base for it and why I was doing it.
We have to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Salami Tommy.
Oh, Tommy.
Here with the gravy, Davy.
Davy.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. Have a tomato, Plato.
Welcome back. You're listening to Say Yes to the Chef. My name is Kelly Taylor, and my co-host is Janice Escott.
But as I told you, I did at the university, we did a speed dating, professional speed dating about 6 months ago, where the students... I teach graduate nutrition students, and we wanted them to see all the different areas of dietetics they could go into. So there was public health, there was maybe somebody who specialized in eating disorders, and I was billed as the integrative nutritionist. And the way I described it to them was a very typical patient for me with somebody would come in and they would be quite obese, a BMI of 30, often of 35, which is stage 2 obesity, which just a lot of times these women look very nice. You know, they've learned to groom themselves, they learn to dress, but it's a health risk. And they also would have elevated blood sugar, and they'd have terrible IBS, irritable mm-hmm. bowel syndrome, mm-hmm. often goes all together. And a standard dietitian would look at this and say, well, we better do something about your blood sugar right away, and we're going to try to help you lose some weight. And I'm not sure about the IBS, but that'll come later. That'll be the third thing maybe we'll work on. And they would see them as all separate conditions. And if you go to an integrative nutritionist, we say, we know that obesity is an inflammatory condition, actually. It's an inflammatory disease. Diabetes is an inflammatory disease. Prediabetes is an inflammatory disease. And IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, is by definition is an inflammatory disease. So we want to see on a systemic level what's going on to produce this inflammation. And by reducing that, along with dietary changes, can we resolve all these things together?
Yeah, which is the only way I think that you can really, I mean, I'm kind of prejudiced about it all, but frankly, I think you have to look at it from all integrative, from all the pieces have to fit together. Nothing exists separate in your body. You don't have IBS and you don't have obesity and they don't have anything to do with each other. Do you know, like, it's like we have little separate bodies or something. When we start to talk about health and nutrition, it's all one person and everything interrelates. And so the idea for everyone to just separate all of the parts that aren't functioning the way we want them to function and address each one as if it didn't have anything to do with the other ones is a very traditional model. It is a traditional model in Western medicine. But if you start to look outside of Western medicine, you see it isn't a very traditional model, right? If you look into Chinese medicine or Ayurveda,
absolutely,
which are based in, that's how they all came about, was integrative. So this term integrative nutrition being relatively new to maybe our Western ears and is a way to describe what traditionally has been done for thousands of years.
You're absolutely right. And we sometimes forget that medicine is sort of a metaphor antibiotics are not, and that antibiotics really gave doctors their credibility when they were discovered because so many people died of pneumonia and infectious diseases at the turn of the century, and that made doctors gods because they could give them medicines that cured them and still can in cases of serious infection, and doctors can operate, and we have fabulous technology for those acute diseases, for accidents, for surgery. Medicine is absolutely essential, and also for providing that original medical diagnosis. If I suspect any of my patients have a medical underlying condition, I send them to an MD first because I want them to get the basic treatment they need to make sure they don't have something critical that needs to be addressed, and then I'll deal with them. But if you look, many, many doctors now are advertising as integrative and functional medicine doctors. They may have no more knowledge of nutrition than standard doctors, physicians who get 5 days of nutrition training. We get 2.5 to 5 years. It's quite different, plus an internship that deals with nutrition. But if you look at the model of integrative and functional medicine, past the diagnosis, past the drugs, past the MRI, that kind of testing, everything else that's involved with integrative and functional medicine can be accomplished by a registered dietitian nutritionist. And probably a little bit better because we spend so much time with our patients. Mm-hmm. My initial assessment is 90 minutes, which sounds long, but it goes by so fast. Because if you're integrative, you want to know all about someone. Mm-hmm. You want to not just throw food at them, but know how are they living? Who's buying the food? Who's cooking? Who's cleaning up? Are they stressed? Are they depressed? How do they sleep? What are their bowel habits. I mean, you want to know everything about someone because that's also integrative, because the mind-body connection is not imaginary. It's very, very real on both a stress level and other physiological levels, some of it having to do with the gut microbiome, which is everybody's pet word right now.
Yes, it really is. It seems to be on the cure-all now. You know how there's always these new things that are going to solve all of our problems? Now it's the gut biome.
Yes.
Right. And you're listening to Community Radio WCOM 103.5 FM in Carrboro. And our guest today is Susan Weiler. We're talking about so many interesting things. And Susan, I'd like you to tell the name of the book and something about Dr. Rao from Switzerland.
The name of the book is The Swiss Secret to Optimal Health. That was the publisher's title. And it's really Dr. Rao's diet for whole body healing sort of anchors the book. It's a three-week detox diet. And I use much of that in my – he goes through the whole his whole theory of medicine, which is a little – eccentric, but as I said, medicine is metaphor, and much of what he preaches about the internal milieu of the body 10 years ago is current medicine now, and he always told me he was absolutely evidence-based, and it was true. There were all these things he told me about the gut microbiome influencing health, about reversing early-stage cancers through diet, which I was about IgG gut intolerances, mm-hmm. which I kind of didn't say much about when I started school, although I did show them the book, but I didn't want them to think I was too far out. And all these things have been validated in the literature. He showed me a picture of the agouti mice in a German science magazine long before I got to UNC. Do you know the agouti mice?
No.
They're really interesting. It was done at Duke, and I believe the researcher's name was agouti. It's how they got their name. So they can breed these mice so that they're genetically identical. And, you know, we worry a lot. Most of us have something in our family, mm-hmm. heart disease, cancer, something that's going to maybe get us, right? And we worry about it a lot.
Yes.
But in fact, a lot of evidence shows that except for a couple of really horrible genes, our DNA causes about 20% of our outcome. And we have a huge amount of control over 80%. And some of that is from what they call epigenetics, which is what happens on top of your DNA. Mm-hmm. So your DNA codes for proteins, and that makes everything else in your body happen. Enzymes are proteins, hormones are proteins. So Dr. Agouti took these mice that were genetically identical, and he took two pregnant mice. Well, he took a lot more than that, but let's say there were two groups of pregnant mice, and he fed them all mouse chow that was laced with bisphenol A.
Oh, okay.
That's BPA. That was what they took out of baby bottle plastic.
Right, right.
And it still lines some of our cans, I believe. I don't think it's been totally
no,
banned.
No, I don't think so.
And
it's still there.
He gave one group of pregnant mice just the BPA. The other group, he gave the BPA, but he also gave them major doses of B12, folate, genistein, which comes from soy, and betaine, which comes from beets. And these are all very, very important. Folate and B12 and betaine or betaine also in this methylation pathway, which affects how our DNA reproduces to make sure it reproduces properly. And genistein is a powerful antioxidant. And so the mouse progeny from the mother that just got the BPA were not the – they came out a different color. It's normally a dark brown mouse, and they came out blonde. And given this – and the one who had the nutrition on top of the environmental toxin came out the normal color. Mm-hmm. And the blonde mouse also became obese, eating the same diet as the – other mouse who was lean, and it developed diabetes, and it was likely going to get cancer and die young. And the other mouse was this normal color, lean, disease resistant, and long lived. So it just shows you, it's one small example of how powerful nutrition is. It's not always quick. It's not like taking a pill, but it truly is very, very potent. And what was astonishing about the agouti mice, and no one believed him until they saw it with their own eyes, it carried down to the next generation.
Right. Right. I think they studied aflatoxin like that as well in some mice, where they gave them aflatoxin, some one batch and the other batch, they gave aflatoxin, but they also gave them nutrients just to see the results. It was fascinating. So just to sort of disprove this idea that you are your genes.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that you have some control over your own health, even if it is hereditary. So I thought that was fat. I hadn't heard about these mice, though.
I think they did similar lots of experiments using this model. And it's very important. And I have huge respect for my patients who come in who've said, okay, I want to take control of my health. I don't want to be this way, or I don't want my children to have the illnesses my parents had. And it's really very beautiful, and it's inspiring.
We have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Have a tomato, Plato. Here's got your Toradora.
Oh, Dora.
Try the bologna, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. Have a banana,
Hannah.
Try the salami, Tommy.
Oh, Tommy.
Here with the gravy, Davy.
Davy.
Everybody eats when they come to my house. Have a tomato, Plato.
Plato.
Welcome back. You're listening to Say Yes to the Chef. My name is Kelly Taylor, and my co-host is Janice Escott.
I'm still all food all the time, even though I'm not a food editor anymore. I cook all the time. I love food. I love good food. It's just you choose different foods. That's all. Mm-hmm. I don't count calories. Even with my extremely obese patients, I don't count calories. I don't count carbs. I just look at the different food groups and what is most beneficial for them.
Okay. Well, you have to talk about why you don't count calories, because that's a lot of people are counting calories still. So why don't you count calories?
I don't count calories. A, it's a lot of work. I'm not good with numbers. No, I'm kidding. But I saw many, many women come in who were extremely obese. And I'm talking maybe 5'1", 5'2", 220 pounds. And they would be in tears because they had been trying to lose weight for so long. And often they'd come in after having been on a 1,200-calorie diet. I don't know where that number comes from. I assume the internet. And they'd be eating 1,200 calories, but it would be a bagel for breakfast and a muffin and just a lot of refined carbohydrates and not any very few vegetables and fruits and perhaps too much protein, perhaps not. And what happens is that most obese people are actually undernourished.
Mm-hmm.
Your nutrition affects your metabolism, and your gut microbiome hugely mediates your metabolism. So my first goal is always to stabilize and improve that gut, the microbiota in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
That might involve a probiotic, but I only suggest a probiotic as a Band-Aid because your food should be doing it. You don't need to take a probiotic forever. It's not going to do anything. It's just the same bacteria you have in your gut already. That said, in 5 or maybe 7 years or maybe 3 years, I think we will have designer probiotics that will affect particular conditions, be more effective for particular conditions, but we're not there yet.
Because they'll have different strains of bacteria in
them? Exactly, mm-hmm. And they'll understand which ones mediate which processes.
That would be fascinating.
Mm-hmm. It really would. And I even had somebody come to me who had been in an accident. It was a man who'd been in an accident, and he ballooned up because he couldn't walk well afterward. He ballooned up to almost 600 pounds, and he lost over 100 pounds by literally starving himself for a year. And then he came to me because he wasn't losing any weight. So there's zero calories because he was hardly eating. He was just drinking enough fluids to stay alive. And I said to him, I'm going to give you more food than you have eaten in years, and you're going to lose weight. And that's just what happened. It was so touching. It was really beautiful to see how those pounds just melted away when he was given just enough protein, because we have to remember protein has just as many calories as carbohydrates, and you can only process a certain amount of protein at a time. And after that, a little tiny bit might be used for energy, but most of it's turned to urea and it's excreted, and that's a toxic chemical you don't need in your body.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's fascinating. Janice is like sitting over here flabbergasted. I wish you could see her face.
I'm loving this. This is amazing information.
It is.
That is extremely valuable for the public to hear. I mean, a person with that weight, and then you're saying to them, eat. I love that theory because it makes so much sense.
Weight Watchers does a very good job, you know, of all the food diet programs. If someone's going to do it on their own, Weight Watchers is very, very good. And they do some of this in that they have all their free foods. And your free foods are largely your non-starchy vegetables. Mm-hmm. And they really are the best thing to turn to first, both because they are very low in calories, because to a certain extent, calories matter. It just matters where you're getting them from. Right. And also, you're getting all those micronutrients and especially fiber. Fiber is one of the most important elements that I see missing in people's diets. I do a computer analysis of a four-day food diary for most of my patients, and it's incredibly eye-opening. It really is.
Mm-hmm. So how do you, because what you're talking about is a big change for people on what they eat and therefore how they cook. So do you have, how do you help people, I guess, make this change?
Well, part of integrative nutrition is individualized nutrition. So I don't have a one-size-fits-all program because some people come to me and they're very upfront. They say, I'm very nervous about this and I'm not very good and I can only make small changes. All I want to do is make small changes at a time. And I listen to them because you have to listen to people. And so I do make small changes. Usually the first thing I'll do is take them off of sweetened beverages, whether it's natural or artificial, because we know added sugar is terrible for you. It adds calories. It gives you no nutrition. And too much refined carbohydrates are associated with a number of chronic diseases, among them diabetes and cancer. The artificial sweeteners are not a good substitute. For years, studies showed that the artificial sweeteners were associated with obesity, but we didn't know why. We thought, well, is it because people know they've saved this number of calories, so they're going to go have the fries, or we really didn't know why. And a number of recent studies have shown that those artificial sweeteners, so they're artificial, they're made in a laboratory, and you have no enzymes to digest them. So, A, they give very mixed signals to the body, to the brain, and the taste buds. They're getting different signals, and that seems to be associated to some degree with your glycemic control. But also, they damage the gut microbiota. And that lining, the lining of the gut is so incredibly important in your metabolism. So that's why they're not good. But I don't like to take something away and not give someone something in return. So we were talking before about this drink, and I just served it to a friend last night who came over for dinner, and I said, I don't want to drink any wine this week because I like to have wine with my dinner, but I just want to clean out a little bit and get it down for a while. And how do you feel? And she said, yeah, I want to lose a couple of pounds. I don't want any wine tonight. So I served her this wonderful drink that I use both for people who don't want to drink alcohol and who want to get off of soda. And you do a tall glass of seltzer over ice if you like it chilled with a couple of teaspoons of this syrup that is called Darbo, D-A-R-B-O. And it comes from Germany or Austria, I forget which, but it has a little sugar in it, but it's only 15 calories a teaspoon, and that's what a teaspoon of sugar has, 15 calories. And you put 2 teaspoons in a tall glass of seltzer. I like the black currant because it's the most intense. Raspberry is also good, and I serve it with a big squeeze of lemon or lime, and that's 30 calories compared to at least 120 for a sugar-sweetened beverage?
Mm-hmm. What is the Darbo?
Or a glass of wine.
What's Darbo syrup?
It's a fruit syrup. It's a natural fruit syrup. It has sugar in it, but no corn products, no high-fructose corn syrup or corn syrup, no additives, no preservatives.
Mm-hmm. So would it be the same as if you made if you blended up some fruit and then reduced it to a syrup?
Yes, you'd have to add sugar if you added a certain amount of sugar to it to make it a syrup, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Because that's how I always am telling in my house, we always have Pellegrino because I have I like Pellegrino, but just some kind of sparkling thing. And then we always have, I reduced pomegranate juice just on the stove, poured it in a pot, reduced it, and then we just add that to the water.
That's brilliant. That's exactly what it is.
So it's like a way to just make an interesting, because my house, we like flavored, I drink water pretty much. That's what I drink all day. But mostly the rest of them would like flavored something. Mm-hmm. So I had to come up with something flavored. And I didn't want them drinking just a lot of the other things that they were drinking. So yeah, we just reduce things. And sometimes I don't reduce it. Sometimes we just put a little juice in and it's not sweet,
nope.
But it's flavored.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes we'll just put some orange juice in there or, you know, some kind of juice that isn't concentrated at all. It's just the juice of something to add a flavor to it. And that seems to help and kind of cut it. But it does take some time if you're used to having a very sweet drink.
It's true. And to be honest, I come from up north. I was born in Connecticut, but I lived most of my adult life in New York City. And the dietary habits in the South are quite different. There's a lot more sugar down here and a lot more fried
the
foods.
Sweet tea.
Yes. Yes.
Sweet tea. So it's not just the sodas. It's the sweet teas. And although I said to you I make small changes, that's with the minority of my patients who really feel that way. When people come in and they say, I'm ready to make a change, I want to lose all this weight, or I've had this chronic IBS for so long and I've been to every naturopath and GI person and I just need help, I throw away what I learned in school, which is make one small change at a time, and I just change everything all at once. And I do it by putting them on a three-week diet because anyone can do 21 days. It's not like forever. And they can fantasize that when they're through with the 21 days, they can go back to their old ways. And it's 21 days for a real reason, because you know every cell in your body turns over at a different rate. You've probably heard this before, but there's a saying that in 7 years, you'll be a totally different person.
Yeah, I love that. I need to remember that.
So your red blood cells, for example, live for about 120 days. And that's why for blood sugar, for people with diabetes or prediabetes, a test of glycated hemoglobin, A1C, is done on the red blood cells because the sugar crystals stick to them. And because it's 120 days, but all those cells aren't born on the same day, it gives you the average amount of sugar in the blood for the last 2 to 3 months. Whereas if you just do a fasting blood sugar, that's like a little selfie. That's like, how much sugar's in your blood at this
right
moment
now.
In time? Yeah. So it's a much more accurate test, and I wish it were used more often, because many people will have normal fasting blood sugar, but there's a good chance if they have a BMI of 35 or higher that they also have at least prediabetes, if not diabetes. And
well, we can hold that thought for right there. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about sort of a lot of things, but what we were talking about right now, which is making a bunch of choices and a bunch of changes at one time rather than little incremental, which is a woman after my own heart.
Right.
So we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Dr. Jorge and I treated someone on the doctors. I treated her long distance over a four-month period, and I knocked her A1C down from, and she had been diabetic for 10 years. I knocked her A1C down from 8.3 to 6.7, which is just a hair above prediabetes and is a perfectly acceptable number for someone with diabetes. It's considered a safe number for someone with diabetes. And she was wonderful. She was committed to changing her diet. And I gave her my super-duper detox diet for 3 weeks, and then we went on to a maintenance diet that was much easier to follow. But in addition to that, she started walking and working out, because physical activity is essential for lowering blood sugar. Insulin, which is produced by the beta cells of the pancreas, opens up a channel into the cells so that the blood sugar can go from your bloodstream into your cells and provide energy. If you exercise, a back door opens up that is not insulin dependent. So people, for example, who have type 1 diabetes and have to take insulin actually have to reduce their insulin if they exercise rigorously for 2 hours or longer. So it really, really, really works. And so exercise both helps clear your blood sugar. It also increases your muscle mass. So unless you're an extreme athlete, you're really not going to burn off enough calories to offset what you eat. We'd like to think we do, but we really, maybe you'll buy yourself a glass of wine. I don't know. But what it does is build muscle tissue, and muscles are metabolically active. Fat is not. Fat is just a container for our energy so that we can sit here and talk and live while we're not eating, because you have to have that energy from somewhere. It's left over from breakfast right now, and it's saved as fat cells because fat can hold 9 grams. Fat has 9 calories per gram,
right,
whereas protein and carbohydrates only have 4, and you'd be big as a house if you saved your energy as carbohydrate. So the exercise is really, really essential for all your health, for cancer survival, for diabetes, and certainly for weight loss.
I didn't realize that you said there is a back door. That's a really interesting way of putting that, because I didn't know that the back door meaning, so if insulin is coming into your cells, right, or pushing the sugar into your cells, there's got to be another way to get it out of your cells.
No, you burn it in you end up burning it in the mitochondria of your cells. But this is a different channel opens up, so the sugar can get in from a different channel that would be opened from the and I apologize for my poor memory for biochemistry to tell you exactly channel it is.
Oh, so, wow, it's complicated.
So I guess I still don't understand then. So the exercise, when you say backdoor, what does that mean?
It means it's a different channel. So think of a little hole.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that opens up so the sugar can go into your bloodstream.
Right.
So insulin opens up one door.
Okay.
And that's the one that we normally use to get sugar into the insulin's in our pancreas. And when we eat, it senses it and it releases the insulin into our bloodstream so it can usher the sugar into our cells.
Mm-hmm.
If you exercise, it opens up a different door.
Okay.
That doesn't rely on the insulin to open it.
Ah, I see. So it doesn't raise your insulin levels.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it's good not to have an excessive insulin level because it's a growth hormone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I never thought of it like that. It also doesn't increasing when you have more insulin. I don't know if this is true or not. Does it mean that you will retain fat more if you have higher levels of insulin?
Well, it doesn't. It's not. If you have higher levels of insulin, you're probably not absorbing it. You become insulin resistant. So sometimes people have what's called metabolic syndrome.
Yes, I've heard that.
Or PCOS, and they have poor insulin resistance. So even though they're pumping out all this insulin, it's not working. Something's stopping it from working. So the insulin builds up, and you still don't get the energy in your cells, which is why you're fatigued.
Oh, I didn't put PCOS in there. That's interesting. We just have so much knowledge. It's like, how is that all coming out of your head?
3.5 years of school, and I read all the time. I read the journals all the time.
Well, you can tell.
You can tell.
Yes,
absolutely.
It's great that you have the evidence-based and you have the science-based. Both, right? Like, I feel like, you know, learning with the Swiss Dr. Rao, is that his name? As well as just sort of understanding maybe some other cultures, a way of handling health and wellness, is because before we had microscopes, right? Before we could get inside and see what was actually happening, people had to come up with a way for health and wellness to help people heal. And that is really important. And I find it a bit rude when people throw that out without assuming that there is some truth in what has been done. It doesn't mean they necessarily understood the pathway that made that happen, or the antioxidant that made it happen, or the nutrient that made it happen. But it's true that they figured out a lot of things, like people who add lime to corn in Mexico, right? We figured that out somehow. It's amazing.
And that makes the B vitamins that are normally locked into the grain available. You're very knowledgeable yourself.
So I feel like there's so much to be learned from studying those types of wellness systems, or I don't even know what that would be called, but there's real truth in that. And throwing it just out because there hasn't been an identifiable reason in science that explains why that works is sometimes, to me, I think a little bit cerebral or something. You know, it's just like
it's arrogant,
is what
you're saying.
Yes.
Well, you know, and you make such a good point. And think of acupuncture that's been used for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
And the first acupuncturist I went to was a Chinese doctor up in New York State. And he had been the anesthetist on the team that attached it was many years ago. You're a little young to remember. You might remember when they attached the first thumb. It was the first digit to be attached.
Yes.
And they used acupuncture for that.
Uh-huh,
acupuncture
exactly.
is incredibly effective for the pain of osteoarthritis.
Mm-hmm.
It works. It's in our textbooks. They're not totally sure how it works, as you say. They think it blocks the afferent nerve pathways, but they're not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it absolutely works. And I tell all my patients, much better than taking an NSAID, which will damage your stomach, but people are very resistant.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
Well, I want to really point out.
We have to go, too.
Yeah, we do. I want to point out one thing about her diabetes solution book, and that is there are 100 recipes. I've been looking through them. They are fabulous. They are absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
And it could be that they are targeting diabetics. However, they are just everyday stuff that I would really love to cook. So congratulations.
Thank you,
Jim. This is a wonderful book that I have holding in my hand here about the diabetes solution. So this has been absolutely marvelous. Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's been wonderful. Just a reminder to our listeners, what you hear on Yes to the Chef is not meant to cure or heal anyone. Please consult your health provider regarding any questions you might have about what you heard today on this show. If you or someone you know has a food message appropriate to the show, please contact us at our Facebook page, Yes to the Chef, and we would love to hear from you. And please like us on our Facebook page, Yes to the Chef. And for more information and to listen to all the previous podcasts of this program and this very important one today, be sure to visit our website, www.yestothechef.com. And we're co-hosts, Kelly Taylor, Natural Chef and Instructor, and I'm Janice S. Cott, Cordon Bleu Chef and Instructor. Please join us here. Happy cooking, Kelly.
Happy cooking, Janice.
And happy cooking, Susan. Thank you so much. It was delightful.